The Guardian.
Today, part two, and France, Argentina, and Germany, you're up next. Group E looks easy for France, mind you, Group E's usually do, but can the Swiss bring a surprise? Will Bosnia boss Group F, or will it be Hisa today, Govina tomorrow? What of Germany and Portugal? Will top pants model CR7 be making another brief appearance? And can Russia survive 6 weeks behind Capello's Iron Curtain? All these questions and more in this World Cup Daily.
Goal!
Woo! Three sleeps till it all gets underway. I can't believe they haven't called our flight yet, but here we are in the departure lounge. Amy Lawrence has stopped by.
Hello, James.
Hi, Amy. Philippe Eau Claire. So that's a lot of perfume just picked up from the duty free there.
Excuse me.
Well, you're off for quite a trip. And Rafa.
Hello.
Raphael Honigstein.
Hello, James.
Yeah, good. Well, here we are. Let's talk World Cup football. Let's talk some of these teams. The other day, I don't know if you were able to catch this, we romped through groups A to D just to bring you up to date on what we reckon is happening there. Brazil, we think, going out group A. Cameroon, maybe, spoiling Croatia's party. Yeah. In B, it was Spain very much, with Chile and Holland going home. Yep.
Really?
Colombia, yep. They're not going to be bothered by Falcao. They're going to go through from C. Ivory Coast apparently joining them there. That's what the experts say.
Shite.
Really, Philippe? Who's going through in there with you? Excuse my French, eh, Philippe? But who's going through then with Cameroon? With Colombia, sorry.
Japan?
All right.
Okay,
like
why not?
Yeah, okay. And Group D, England to win ahead of the Azzurri.
Ho hum.
All right. Well, now read on, as they say. Next up is Group E. Let's see. Ooh, Switzerland. Hey, yeah, Philippe, this is good. France.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Switzerland, France.
Oh, yes, it is France.
Ecuador and Honduras.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it looks an easy group, but then they've had easy groups before and mucked them up.
Since, yeah. 2002
France,
was
eh?
Easy.
Yeah.
2006 was easy.
All right.
And gosh, that was a little bit of a nail biter.
Yeah.
And 2010 was, to quote the immortal words of a French radio commentator,
ooh,
bingo, when the draw was made.
it's
mythical.
What's French for bingo?
Jackpot, he said.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah.
I would have gone with le bingo.
Le bingo.
Le bingo.
And we all know what Jackpot happened. And Yeah, absolutely.
Are those days gone now? Just 4 years on, is it? It's a new France, isn't it?
Well, we certainly hope so. People are getting very optimistic in France.
Mm.
I think they're getting a bit carried away.
Ooh.
Because it's typical phenomenon when you've got a very young team, very fresh team, a bit like what's happening with England, as a matter of fact. The average age is very low. You've got loads of players that people are really excited to discover. I mean, it looks likely now that we're going to have Antoine Griezmann as well instead of Franck Ribéry on the left-hand side.
Right, because of his back problems.
Because of the back problem. This, I mean, we're pre-recording this. So we don't know what is going to happen, but it's going to be a last-second decision.
How big
by
a blow is it if Ribéry doesn't go?
Not a big blow at all.
Really?
Nope.
Oof.
And I think Raf would agree with me, because the Ribéry we would be taking to the World Cup is not the Ribéry who was so good for Bayern at the beginning of the season.
Wow. Now, Rafa, you've been studying your 11 Friends guidebook there. How do I pronounce that?
El Freunde.
Okay. And what does that tell you?
Well, I'm not going to rip off their thoughts and
okay, but
and pretend they're mine. I would never do that.
Okay.
No, I agree with Philippe. As far as Ribéry is concerned, he was clearly not fully fit over the last, almost 4 months.
Since the operation?
Since the operation on his lower back. And without the explosive pace, without the ability to take one or two players on, there is no player left. Something a bit worrying when it comes to his long-term future, because he will lose that pace. And can he turn into a different kind of player? I don't think he can.
And he's 31, isn't he now? Something like that.
So it's... yeah, it's not a blow if he plays as he did over the last few weeks. It is a blow if he would somehow have been able to recover, because he still is the one player, and we saw that, I think, in the game against Ukraine.
Yep.
that can carry the side.
All right. Well, you mentioned the young players, the under 21 side, the world champions. Is Griezmann one of that party?
Yes, and he was the reason why we haven't seen more of him is because he was in the infamous taxi ride from Le Havre to Paris.
Right.
With Yanim Villa in particular, they had a little bit of a jamboree, shall we say, before a game against Norway, which they lost 5-3, I believe. They were a bit tired. And as a result of that, they got suspended. And Griezmann took his ban actually quite well on the chin. Basically, confessed and said, I deserved my ban, and came back, was excellent. The few times he's been picked by Deschamps has been very complimentary about him. And there are options. Griezmann is not the only one. Loïc Rémy can play on the left as well, which honestly I would be quite happy with. Mm-hmm. And it's a French team that people think has got legs, youth, freshness, and also what we hope is that they're going to make us forget about 2010.
I think that's interesting when you're talking about Ribéry as well. And although obviously it's not something that Deschamps would have welcomed because he originally picked him in the squad, but there is a sense that it's very clear trying to dilute the effect of the troublemakers has been a fundamental part of not just Deschamps but also Laurent Blanc's work after 2010. And if Ribéry doesn't make it, you'll correct me if I'm wrong here, Philippe, but I think that probably leaves only Patrice Evra as someone who was sort of implicated from that catastrophe.
Right, and of similar characterial issues or similar personality issues that are surrounding Samir Nasri and his exclusion. When you look back at France's qualifying, which nearly came to a disastrous end after the 2-0 away to Ukraine, that was the moment that Nasri got dropped. And since then, France have had an absolutely amazing sequence of games.
They've had a decent sequence of games. I mean, they haven't, you know, there was the 1-1 draw against Paraguay. It was not exactly one of the highlights of Deschamps' reign, but they've been better.
Beat Holland 2-0.
Yes, I mean, that was not the full-strength Holland side by any means. The win against Norway, 4-0, was impressive when you saw the goals. Then when you realised that Norway were so poor that one of their subs is actually a guy who hasn't got a club at the moment. It starts to put things in perspective, shall we say. But it's a very young squad, and it's got potential. I mean, I think it's a team that is built for 2016 as much as this is for 2014.
Prospects in this World Cup?
If they finish top of the group, which is a big if, I think quarterfinals, and that would be excellent. I'd be quite happy with that.
If you finish second, you potentially are facing Argentina.
Yeah, and then it's goodbye. Adieu.
The rest of this group then, Ecuador, Honduras, who've done the bizarre managerial swap there, because the Ecuadorian manager, Reynaldo Rueda, used to manage Honduras, and the Honduran manager, who's the other Luis Suarez, used to manage indeed Ecuador. But I'm thinking that maybe Switzerland look the strongest other side here, and they do look strong, don't they, Rafa? Do they look a bit boring as well, or is that the old Switzerland?
Well, the players are exciting. Unfortunately, Ottmar Hitzfeld is very old school, very pragmatic, always concerned with not conceding, setting up very, very solidly, and then hoping through the pace that they've got up front, through the likes of Shakir or Drimic, who's had a breakthrough season, of course, going to Leverkusen on the back of a great 6 months with Nuremberg, to exploit that pace. And they are a very, very good counter-attacking side. Their qualifying performances were excellent. They've got a very good record against France.
Last three games, three draws and only one goal conceded. Yeah. And all of them in competitive games, either World Cup qualifiers or World Cup.
Mm. After ultimately the disappointment of 2010, when they managed to beat Spain but still got knocked out, which was a huge letdown, I think they're in a decent position to get out of this group.
All right. Josip Jurmic is a player that I hear about every Sunday night from his work in Nuremberg. For those who are not acquainted with him yet, how would you describe him?
Well, he's a sort of Michael Owen type striker, not very physical but very, very quick, can play wide, can play through the middle, loves balls over the top, likes to get into channels, loves to shoot from distance as well. Really useful player to have. And he's been so good that since he started playing for Switzerland, was only a few months ago, he's already become the number one, totally undroppable first name on the team sheet kind of player for them.
Cool.
Would you agree that? I mean, I can't say I've seen him play an awful lot, but everybody I talks to me about Valentin Stocker as being possibly one of the revelations of the World Cup. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yes. Absolutely. I mean, he's a fantastic player. I'm surprised he moved to Hertha and not a bigger club. He had, I think, some inquiries from the Premier League on the strength, on the back of a fantastic season with Basel, also last season.
Yeah.
And in Switzerland, people were a little bit surprised that there wasn't a bigger club in for him. But yes, he is. He's a great player. He's a great orthodox winger, also very hardworking, another key player. Along with Shaqiri, I hope that Shaqiri will recover from his injury problems. He hasn't played for 2 months either.
Mm.
And he's obviously key for Switzerland's chances.
All right, so beyond them, as I say, Honduras and Ecuador.
Ecuador, like the Cru Alexandra of South American football.
Very much so. And I don't know as much about them. That's the thing.
Well, they're very good when they play at home.
Okay.
And it's very high and you can't breathe.
Right.
And when they go back to what we call the cow's floor.
In sea French, level.
Le plancher des vaches.
Oui. That's you call sea's level the cow's floor?
Yeah, the plancher des vaches, yes.
Do cows never stray above... You get mountain cows, don't you?
Cows? Actually, in Switzerland, you get loads of those. But,
right, okay.
But they do have primes. I don't think they won any of their qualifiers away from home. And their results haven't been exactly great. I mean, they were beaten by Mexico, actually, in a friendly recently.
Oof.
And they also drew against the Netherlands, but again, against what was an experimental side.
Right. Honduras, by contrast, have never won a World Cup game in two tournaments. They didn't score last time out either.
They did have some good results in qualification, particularly they beat the USA at Ooh. Home, but Mexico away.
Right.
Which suggests that
And in London 2010, their Olympic team got to the quarterfinals.
But when you see that some of their players are guys like Espinoza.
Or Manuel Figueroa.
Yeah.
Wilson Palacios,
I think, perhaps. And their preparation hasn't been great. I mean, they've been absolutely tonked by Israel. 4-2, which is not a great result, and they were also beaten by Turkey 2-0. So, hasn't been the greatest of preparations for Honduras.
Right.
Even though everybody keeps telling me they might be the surprise team in that group, the one that will get a draw that you're not expecting.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
right.
The draw with Ecuador,
for example.
There you go. I'm going to say France, Switzerland. Then is that right? Is that what I'm hearing?
In order, or just like...
Well, I think that seems to be the feeling. Is that right? Or is Switzerland going to...
I think that's fair.
All right.
It's fair enough, but I think what you could agree is that the second game is going to be the crucial one, which is when they meet.
Mm.
And there's such a huge difference between whether they finish first or second, because whoever obviously finishes second is going to assume that they've got one more game against Argentina, and whoever finishes top of the group can hope for... something rather better than that.
Somebody else from Group F, which
could
be Bosnia-Herzegovina, Iran or Nigeria. Teams that we'll be talking about after this.
World Cup Football Daily, just like being in Brazil.
Yeah, Group F's up next. As I mentioned, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Iran, Nigeria, but also Argentina. Hey, and joining us now on the line, it's Planet of Brain, Jonathan Wilson.
Hi, James, how you doing?
I'm very well. Oh, you sound like you're abroad. Where have you managed to fly to?
I'm in Budapest at the moment.
All right. What are you doing there?
I'm promoting the Hungarian edition of Pyramid. Well, I've actually been slightly scuppered because there's a company who's producing the book. They've all gone on strike today because their boss has been sacked. So the camera crew who's meant to be doing it is on strike. So I've had a free day in Budapest.
Well, that's a shame that the people of Hungary have had an off day from actually finding out about... inverting the pyramid, but it's delightful to see that there, you know, in the old Eastern Bloc, the workers go and strike in favour of the bosses. That's brilliant. Listen,
it's quite a serious story about freedom of the press, and I'm all in favour of the strike. Irritating as it has been to me, I think they are right to strike.
Right. All right.
You can look it up. It's a disgrace what happened.
I tell you what, speaking of strikers, let's chat about Argentina, who just maybe have the best strike force in the world. With the Aguero, Higuain and Messi. What do you think?
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, I think that the first 11 of Argentina is probably the strongest of any of the teams. The worry is the backup. And because you've got such strikes up front, they can afford to leave Tevez behind. So, but I think the strength of that side is actually the balance within it. They've got that great front three, but they've also got a midfield three that, if Gago's fit, I think services that front three very, very well, and Di Maria is absolutely key to that. And the problem they've had in recent tournaments, Batista sort of didn't have the nerve to drop some of his high profile players, the Copa America, Maradona tried to pack all these forwards in at the World Cup in 2010. And Alejandro Sabella is very pragmatic, he's very ruthless, And he started out playing without Aguero as well. He started playing a 4-4-1-1. And it, as qualifying went on, they brought Aguero in and switched to a 4-3-3. And I think the unit does look very, very strong.
All right. Does it work well for Messi? Because he's maybe the one ingredient that hasn't really blossomed previously.
Well, I mean, he hasn't blossomed at a tournament, but his form has certainly been better in the last couple of years. He's been very, very good in the qualifiers. He scored that hat-trick against Brazil in the friendly in the US in 2012. And really since then, he has started to replicate his club form for the country. And I think the team now is set up to suit him. He plays in a role. He used to play at Barcelona on the right-hand side, cutting in field. He's got Zabaleta going outside him, not quite in the same way, but in a similar way to how Dani Alves used to. So I think the structure of the team is much better for him now. And I think there is sort of an expectation that this is his time.
Right. It sounds mouthwatering when you describe it. And they went 18 months unbeaten before their final, where they had that dead rubber at the end of their qualifying, which didn't matter too much. So even though defensively there are question marks, they've had an amazing qualifying record.
Yeah, and you're right. There certainly are questions about the defence and about the goalkeeper. I mean, Romero, I think, is a slightly odd choice. I'm not quite sure why Willy Caballero doesn't get a look in, for instance. Left-back, Rocco, he's all right. There's nothing wrong with Rocco. He's only 24. He may well have a great tournament and we'll start talking about him as one of the world's best left-backs. But he's not of the same stature as the rest of the first team. So, there are a couple of issues at the back, but I think the defensive issues sort of get slightly overplayed just because the rest of the team is so good. You look at the defenders, people like Guy and Fernandez and Rocco, and you think, well, that's not as good as Mascherano and Messi and Higuain and Aguero. But it's not bad. It's fine.
Hmm. Are they going to win the World Cup, do you think, Jonathan?
Well, they were my favourites until sort of about 6 weeks ago. And I increasingly think Brazil might do it. But I think they've got a... Yeah, I think he's got a fantastic chance. There is this issue that sort of that haunts them. It's a bit like England this year, I guess, the different variant of it, that they haven't won a tournament since 1993. The only team they've beaten a knockout game in the World Cup since 1990 is Mexico. They've beaten twice. So there's a great sense of underachievement. But this is a side that they won 5 out of 7 World Under 20 championships between 1995 and 2007. So they've had a great wealth of talent, and they haven't delivered on it. And I think there's a sense that the youth program isn't producing players in such big numbers anymore. That really, if they don't do this tournament, that there's that huge waste, and there is a sense of the clock ticking. And that team that won the 2005 World Youth Cup, that's sort of the heart of this team. They also had Paletti, who, of course, in the Italy squad was in that side. They had Messi, Aguero, Garay, Gargo, were all in that team. So this sort of the 2005 generation, this is their chance.
Right. That's an unbelievable stat. The only team they've beaten in knockout since when? 1990?
Well, in 1990, when they got to the final, they beat Brazil.
Yeah.
Since then, the only team they've beaten in a knockout, if you don't include penalties, is Mexico.
Wow. All right, Jonathan. Having laid that one on us, we salute you. Enjoy your business there in Hungary. And have a good flight to Brazil.
Cheers, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jonathan Wilson. That was quite a stat. Less good when he qualified it with the penalties bit, but still mind-boggling numbers there. Are they going to stroll through this group? Bosnia-Herzegovina, we've heard so much about them, and Dzeko and Pjanic up front is mouth-watering stuff. Begovic at the back, fantastic keeper.
You mean Dzeko and Ibisevic?
Oh, really? You think it's good? And Pjanic behind?
Yes.
Oh, right. Okay, well, then that's even better.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm although, even more mouthwatering.
I think there is a debate in Bosnia whether Safin Susic will change away from the 4-4-2 because I think it's seen as very, very open.
Right.
I mean, their centre-backs, Špajić and Bičakčić,
yep.
They're good, sort of solid, strong in the air, don't easily turn kind of centre-backs. And I'm not sure you can expose them. Against these kind of players. Špajić had just has been totally exposed in the Champions League with Leverkusen. He was really, really awful. And Bičakčić just went down with Braunschweig, looking not quite like a Bundesliga player. And with the greatest respect to the teams in their qualifying group, It was an easy group.
All right. Well,
this one,
I was getting quite excited about Bosnia.
This one would be difficult for them.
Really?
Yeah.
Because lots of clever folk have been talking about Bosnia-Herzegovina and that. But I thought the issue with them was a lack of depth.
That's another issue.
Oh, okay.
You look past the star players and then you've got like, I mean, Misimovic is a star player, but he's been playing in China. And
that's even, an amazing book you've got.
Even
there.
At the... I knew that before. Even at the... At his best,
yeah.
He always had issues with weight.
Yeah.
He famously loves chocolate.
Ooh.
And I don't know what kind of condition he'll come back from his time in China.
All right, so if Argentina are going through from this group, and we can probably all share Jonathan's opinion that they look pretty strong, yeah?
Yeah.
And Bosnia-Herzegovina may fall apart.
That first game is interesting, the fact they've got Argentina first. You know, is that going to be something that inspires them? Is that going to be something that intimidates them?
4-0 defeats are never really that inspiring.
If they have a rough start, you know, they've got to pull themselves together really quickly because it's like a mini league, isn't it? Essentially, outside of Argentina, and one that's so unpredictable because you've got teams with such different backgrounds. Obviously, you've got an African team, an Asian team, and a European team, and South American team in Argentina. So it's such a difficult group to assess from that point of view, because when you get those kind of cultural clashes, sometimes you really have no idea which way it's going to go.
All right. I'd say it's extraordinarily exotic. It's an extraordinarily exotic group, this one.
Mm.
Bosnia-Herzegovina, the Cinderella story, if you like, of the World Cup. Argentina just look amazing. Then you've got Nigeria. This is their fifth World Cup, unbeaten in qualifying, although they haven't won any of their last eight World Cup appearances, apparently. In Iran, their manager is Carlos Queiroz.
Mm.
That's where he got to. And he's adopted the vernacular as well. A quote here, he says, "We've been wandering through the desert." He means like with Iran. Mm. "But we are like camels now arriving at the oasis." But it's a metaphor. Is it a metaphor? Or is it a
simile?
It's a simile.
Mm. It's a simile. Mm. And the interesting thing for Iran, which actually is something I don't think has been mentioned by anybody so far, is... but which will have an impact also on other teams, is that the holy month of Ramadan starts on the 20th of June, bang in the middle of the tournament. And the exact date, I can't tell you because, you know, it's the lunar calendar, and it starts on the 28th.
28th of June?
Yes, which means for the round of 16.
Yeah.
And there are a number of teams which have got, obviously, Muslim players.
Yeah.
France is one of them, for example, but obviously Iran. And if you have to respect and abide by the rules of Ramadan, some teams are going to be have a big problem there.
Wow.
Interesting facts, isn't
That's
it?
A really interesting fact.
I suspect Iran won't have that problem, though.
Yeah, there's that. Even though I've seen one famous banker, I think, banking organization, having them qualifying for the round of 16, using quite incredible algorithms which enabled them to predict the 2008 crack that I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Goldman Sachs, yes.
And those
famous experts.
Right, so they've got Iran down there to make
I think it's either Goldman Sachs or Bloomberg, but one of the two have Iran in the round of 16.
Brilliant.
And Nigeria is a weird one, though. I mean, I really don't know what to make of them. I mean, they were not that great against Scotland. Did you see them against
Scotland?
The goalkeeper
looked good.
Yeah, didn't he, though? They've got goal-scoring potential there, certainly in the goal.
Their great strengths are right at the back and right at the front. Their goalkeeper is very strong.
Vincent Enyama.
Enyama.
The real goalkeeper.
Yeah,
the real one.
Emmanuel Emenike is a real strength for them as well. They're a very pacey team, which I think could be a danger to... particularly the defence of Iran or Bosnia in those matches. There's such a kind of mood change, though, about the Nigerian team in the sense that it was so long that they have felt that they're exiled a bit from the top level of football. They didn't even qualify for the African Cup of Nations a couple of years ago, which was disastrous for them. And then, of course, they actually won it last year. So they feel, I think, a bit renewed, and they're ready to sort of... They should be the strongest team from Africa. And I think they feel that they can at least try and prove that this time.
Right.
And they've got the fantastic manager, Mr. Keshi. The guy who's managed to put some order in the house.
In reference to Jonathan Wilson's top stat about Argentina.
Oh, yeah.
Nigeria haven't won a World Cup match of any nature since beating Bulgaria at France 98.
I kind of did that one myself.
Did you?
I was a witness in the last eight World Cup games, but that's all right.
Okay. Was I not listening though?
No, that's right. Well, I probably gambled it. What I'm drawing from this, and do stop me if I'm getting this wrong, is that Argentina are going to win the group and Nigeria are going through alongside them. Yeah? Do you know, Amy, they haven't actually won a game at the World Cup.
Neither have Bosnia.
No, that's true.
I have Bosnia too.
You having Bosnia?
I have Bosnia, yeah.
And Rafa?
I go with Nigeria.
Right. Mm. Have some of that, world. Hey, up next, Rafa, it's Group G.
Mm. World Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
Group G. G for Ghana.
Germania.
Ah, also, yeah, that's true. They're in there as well, aren't they? Yeah. Hey, Rafa, do you know now? 18 years of hurt. You've been to five. You've reached the semi-finals of the last five tournaments without winning anything.
Yeah, we hurt at slightly different levels, though.
I'd say that's even bitterer, you know, to get so close you can even taste it.
I mean, I would agree with you for this World Cup because 2006, huge pressure to perform, but no real expectation. 2010, Balak not in the team, really young team. People think, you know, can we make it past the group stage? Great run in the end. Yes, they fell short a little bit, but wasn't seen as a failure by any means. This time, a year ago, if you'd asked me, and the mood in Germany would have been anything but the World Cup would be a disappointment. This is the time to perform. This is the time to deliver. Lewis had a few runs, came fairly close in all competitions, but he must now come back with that trophy. Since then, injuries have piled up. They've worked really hard to push this message that the conditions would be very, very difficult, especially if you want to play nice football, probably won't be able to, and bad kickoff times for Germany, bad locations for Germany. So that kind of negative PR campaign, almost, of managing expectations down, combined with the injuries, have sort of now created almost a... I wouldn't say doubts and worries, but it's a much more dampened type of euphoria and expectation as he would have had a few months ago.
All right, do you think those are all valid concerns, the kickoff times, the locations?
3 months ago, Löw said, the condition's going to be so tough, we only can take 100% fully fit players at the top of their game. Then people started getting injured, and suddenly he's been taking players who are patently not 100% fit and fully on the game, and that's bad enough, but now you put them into the humid conditions of lunchtime and early afternoon kickoffs in subtropical climate, and it's going to be very, very difficult. And these aren't just sort of fringe players, second or third goalkeeper. You're talking about the very heart of the German midfield and a team. You talk about Khedira, Schweinsteiger, Lahm, Neuer potentially as well, the goalkeeper, all with serious question marks around them. Klose might not be 100% either. And all these guys, you know, would be starters. So it's a concern, of course.
Wow, this is actually quite worrying, isn't it? And if Klose's not fit, and he's, what, 36 anyway, isn't he? Mm. Who else have they got up front?
Well, because they've hardly been able to count on the services and qualifiers, they have evolved now to this false nine system, and there they have options. That's the one area where Germany have loads of options. They can play Schürrle there, they can play Götze there, they can play Müller there, they can play Reus there, or they can even play Mesut Özil there. Tried it for Germany in a few games, wasn't a fully great success, but he still ended up being the main goal scorer with 8 goals in the qualifiers. So you don't worry necessarily about them scoring, but you worry about the balance if those key players in the middle aren't there to hold the whole thing together. Mm-hmm. Because my fear is almost that they could be the Argentina of 2010, where they were wonderful going forward. Then there was a huge gap, about 50 metres, and then there were 4 guys who were just standing around, you know, looking for help, and it didn't arrive, certainly not against Germany. And this could be a very similar scenario.
I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but also because Schmelzer is not going, which means there's no left back, right? No specialist left back. Plenty of central defenders.
The new specialist left back is Erik Durm.
He's got one cap, right?
He's got one cap. He's only played a handful of games for Dortmund, but he's got Champions League experience, and he didn't look out of place at that kind of level. And I think that counts for more than somebody who might have played a few friendlies but isn't quite at the required level. And I think Schmelzer was probably fit enough to be taken,
Yeah.
But Louis never believed him in the first place.
Okay.
And he's been very derogatory in the past, saying, "Ah, I wish we had a fullback. I can't make them, so we have to take Schmelzer." And the Dortmund club officials weren't very happy with that assessment.
Raph, I totally get that false nine thing, and that's how they've been evolving over the last couple of years. But is there not some questions about the fact that there is no viable alternative as an authentic centre forward to Klose? If you're in a game where you need a goal,
isn't there someone Polish
on,
they could pick?
Don't start. Lewandowski is not German.
Okay.
Unfortunately. Yes, I mean, the option to go direct and sort of hoof it, there's only one player who can play in that role, and that's Per Mertesacker. Hasn't really worked out for Arsenal on the few occasions where he did go at the very end, despite Wenger's wishes, apparently. But no, there isn't that Sturmbrecher, as we say in Germany, somebody who, like, you know, can break hard defences down with sheer brute force. Löw isn't that kind of manager, and now he hasn't got any of these players either. So it's very much a team built in his image, and he'll be judged on that, because that's the way he wants it.
So if it gets the knockout stages and there's 10 minutes to go of a game and Germany need a goal, Per Mertesacker's going to go up front. Is that the plan?
Yeah, or Mats Hummels. There isn't a number nine. There just isn't. Even Klose, who is the most recognised striker, is not a box player either. He likes to go deep, he likes to link up. And in Kevin Folland, they had another guy who now has been sent home again. And that's it, as far as strikers are concerned. Now, Mario Gomez is somebody who, again, wasn't quite fit, probably could have been taken. But I believe, and this is something that's not really written about because it's all a little bit hearsay and, you know, you can't really back it up, but I think there's probably non-football reasons why they've left him behind. I think in terms of team spirit, etc., they perhaps see that he doesn't quite fit in as well. And that, coincidentally, is the one positive outcome of all this angst in the build-up, is that the team now, apparently, if we are to believe the noises coming out of camp, are more united and are more together than before because of that bit of adversity, in that sense that we're really up against it here because all of these big players are not fully fit.
All right, well, they're clearly going to destroy the rest of the group, whatever you say. We've got Portugal, who got one player, and he's got tendinosis. What's tendinosis, Philippe? Do you know?
Tendinitis.
No, it says tendinosis.
Sorry?
You need a spell check on your notes.
No, that's what. You go and look.
Tendinosis. Is it something which happens when you have a
when
cold
you
and
you blow? Sneezes, yeah.
Too many sneezes.
Yeah,
yeah.
Tendinosis. Whatever. He's
Ferguson
not well.
Had, I think. No?
Yeah, he's not well. Anyway, whatever it is he's got, he's not well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And even if he was well, would it make any difference? Portugal, you a believer?
What do you mean? Of course, it makes a huge difference.
Well, it would make a difference. But what I mean is, he enough on his own?
Well, he's not on his own.
All right, he's not on his.
He
own.
Is on his own.
Portugal, tell me about Christ. Their chances
in that group.
Yes.
It's the one group that I wouldn't make any predictions of. Honestly, I'm
goodbye.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
No, but do you mean beyond Germany, Philippe? Because of course, Germany.
Yeah, beyond Germany.
All right. Okay. So, here's your options. Portugal.
Well, I can make one prediction.
Right.
I don't think USA are going to go through.
Well, you say that.
I do say
I'm
that.
I'm not so sure. I'm not sure.
Really? Why?
Because
Rafa's going to make a case for the Americans.
I don't see a huge difference between the USA and Ghana.
Right.
And
there
if
you go.
Portugal don't turn up with Ronaldo on the pitch, I think they're more or less on the same level. I mean, they were incredibly bad in qualifiers again. And yes, they scraped through. And yes, Ronaldo
Portugal,
made a huge difference in that Sweden game.
Mm.
But he was awful in a lot of other games. And that's why they got to the qualifiers to the qualifying playoffs in the first place, because they couldn't beat the likes of Israel, for example.
But Ghana, who were just a hand of Suarez away from the semifinals last time?
Yeah, but last time was last time.
Right.
And I don't see a Michael Essien, and I don't see
John Mensah.
I don't see any of these fantastic players in that team.
They seem
sorry.
Quite reliant on
it's a very, the
players who are getting a bit old, and they're so top heavy that it's either going to work really well or they're going to get very badly exposed.
And they're not exactly all singing or dancing.
Ghana.
But no, they're rather stern, dour side, quite defensive, dour side.
Dour side.
And
I don't know. I'm really. It's one group I find very, very difficult to predict, and one in which I would expect surprises if you don't mind the oxymoron.
Brilliant. Absolutely. No Landon Donovan, of course, famously for America. Jurgen Klinsmann's got other tough choices to make, not least when they play the national anthems on the occasion. Has he said he's going to sing both of them?
I don't know what he said.
Oh.
Sorry.
Okay. I thought I read that. Somebody may have been joking.
It would be very Klinsmann-esque to sing both anthems.
Yeah.
With his hand on his heart.
Right. There you go.
The US don't have any necessarily outstanding individual players, but how many times have we seen at World Cups teams who function better collectively negating that difference in class because the others are just a bunch of 11 players who happen to be on the pitch and then don't perform? I think that's one of the reasons why the World Cup overall level of football is pretty poor, because you still have a lot of managers who just pick the biggest names and expect them to get on with it, and very few sides are being coached like club sides with real cohesion, with a real game plan. And I think
is Klinsmann doing that?
I think he's been working very hard towards that, and I think they will be physically, they will probably be one of the best sides in the competition, and that goes a long way if you can run for 90 minutes.
Josie Altidore, guys.
Yeah. I was just trying to.
He's going to score a screamer, isn't he?
Well, probably, yeah. A thunder bastard. I was trying to work out the average age of the Portuguese team, and that's got to be a worry as well. It is one of the oldest groups of players, if you look at the guys who are actually going to start.
Really?
Yeah, but so is Argentina, and they're
loads of players over the age of 30 in this Portuguese side.
Are they Muslim as well?
I'm not aware of that, my dear James.
Have a look.
Yeah, I'll have a look. I'll check it out.
All right. Well, the surprise is in store then in group G. We think Germany, and then after that, you're on your own, I think. Is that right? I quite like this USA story.
Even Germany are not cut and dry. It'll be close.
You know, we've only got one more group to look at. So we'll have a little bit of music, and then we'll do that with our friend Bjorn de Kock. All right then, Group H, it's an exciting one. Algeria, South Korea, Russia, and hipster's favourite, Belgium. Now, one or two issues for Belgium as they head into this. Christian Benteke, of course, is injured. But to tell us a little bit more about I want to call them the Root Devils, but I know that's wrong, so I'm going to ask a man who knows how to pronounce it properly, and that is Bjorn de Kock of Benefoot.net. Hi, Bjorn.
Hello, guys.
How are you?
Fine, fine.
Excellent. How do you pronounce the Belgian team nickname?
The Rode Duivels.
Well, that's pretty much what I said. Excellent. All right, good. Now, how are things looking? How are things looking for Belgium heading into this event? Are the Belgian people pretty confident?
Well, the fans here in Belgium, they expect a lot from this World Cup in Brazil for two reasons, mainly. One, because Belgium qualified again for a World Cup since a long time. It's already 12 years ago since we played at a World Cup. And second, because we have a very talented group of football players. Here in Belgium, fans expect them to go through until at least the semi-finals. As a fan, you can and have the dreams, so nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But I'm a bit more sceptic and realistic in this matter, I think. So I think Belgium should concentrate on surviving that first, you know, that group phase, and everything what comes after that should be an extra experience for this talented team. So, because then afterwards they probably face Portugal or Germany, and that's already something else. You know, like in the draw, we were quite lucky with the draw. Even in a group with Algeria, South Korea, and Russia, I think this team should always aim for a top two spot. But it's important not to underestimate even Algeria and South Korea.
Of course. So, with the Premier League, if you did over the last sort of year or so a Premier League All-Star 11, you could pretty much come up with the Belgian national side. There's so many outstanding players from the English top division who turn out for Belgium. Are there any areas of weakness in this side?
Yes. Now we have a little bit of problem for the striker position. Due to Benteke's injury, Lukaku is the only striker in the Belgian squad. That's why we were also a bit surprised when Marc Hummels, that's the national coach of Belgium, announced his official 23-man squad. We all expected him to select Michy Batshuayi from Standard Liège, who is also on the list of some Premier League clubs, or another real striker. But instead of that, he chose to take Divock Origi from Lille to Brazil. Origi is a very, it's a very talented player, but it's not the same type of player like Benteke is. You know, he plays at the flanks with Lille. Christian Matic is a real target man, and both Origi and Lukaku, they like to move more without the ball, and then, you know, they want to play deeper. So this means that Lukaku has a lot of weight on his shoulders. So he will be Belgium's deepest player. Also, the advantage is that Lukaku had an excellent season with Everton, and he's very eager to show the world how good he is. So, and he also still doesn't know if he will stay at Chelsea, so maybe he can convince Mourinho with a good performance at the World Cup. But also, it looks more and more unlikely that Lukaku will stay at Chelsea, I think, after I just heard that the news that Diego Costa passed his medical at Chelsea.
Mm. Okay, so, a lot of pressure on Eden Hazard as well.
Yeah, certainly. And it's a little bit strange because most of the people think that Eden Hazard is, he's a star in the Premier League. And but he's not really the star of the Belgium squad. The best man during our World Cup qualification matches were Kevin De Bruyne and Axel Witsel. So that were the two key players of Marc Hummels. But our coaches, he's hoping that Eden Hazard kept the best for the World Cup.
All right, brilliant. And a fantastic goalkeeper as well, Thibaut Courtois. Not sure what the news is. Is he going to be at Chelsea next year then, finally?
Well, I think he is, yes, because I also heard the news that Atletico Madrid already bought another goalkeeper. So I think he will certainly leave Atletico Madrid, and I think that the only move is back to Chelsea, I think. I don't think Chelsea will sell him, so... Yeah.
Mm. Okay, so wild expectations in Belgium, semi-finals at the very least. And what's your impression then? I know you're more sceptical, but you're going to get out of the group, but how much further?
Well, it depends. If we end first in the group, we'll probably face Portugal. And against Portugal, I think it's 55-45, maybe for Belgium. But there you have a factor, Ronaldo. If he's on, if he's at his best, then they can beat a lot of teams. But if we end second, because I think Russia has a really strong team, so I wouldn't be surprised if they win the group, then Belgium will, if they proceed well with that second spot, they will face Germany. And Germany, for me personally, it's one of the favourites for the World Cup. So, it will be difficult. It's very difficult to say. But this team can beat every team. So it's not like, 12 years, some years ago when we played against Spain, Italy or Germany. We were all already happy if we could have scored a goal or something. But now we're able to win against those teams. So I'm really looking forward to this World Cup.
Brilliant. Bjorn, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, no problem. It was a pleasure.
Oh, nice one. Well, Belgium, eh? I mean, fantastic lineup of players. I mean, we could sit here for hours saying Vermaelen, Fellaini, Morales, Hazard, Courtois. I mean, there's just so many. Tell me another one.
I had the pleasure of chatting to Vincent Kompany not so long ago, and he described, he felt that the thing for the Belgian team that was so special was, he said it was a brotherhood.
Ooh.
He described it as a movement.
Really?
Yeah. And I think that's the point, is it's not just a technical, gifted group of players that have come through at the same time, but they actually believe in something and, as a group, want to present their country and their football in a light that hasn't been possible over the past decade. And the Belgian national team did have a lot of problems with
the root devils, as I like to call them.
Well,
les diables rouges, yeah.
With this notion that it was quite a fractured group.
Mm.
And Kompany said that there was a division, but it was a division of generations rather than a division in any other way.
Right.
And sort of the old guard didn't really go about things in the way that the younger group were connecting with, and this new generation who've all come through together and are great friends gives them this extra power.
Well, it's a lovely story, anyway. But is he just towing the Kompany line? That's pretty silly. No, nobody needs that.
Did I just build you out?
There's a very interesting thing about that, just to support Amy's point here, is that Vincent Kompany and Thibaut Courtois are people, if you know the names, you would think they're French speakers. Well, both of them went to Flemish schools and speak absolutely fluent Flemish and French. Good. Which is very, very unusual, because it's a country where the manager used to have to do two separate press conferences and all these sort of things. And the fact that they've brought in all these players from very, very different backgrounds who are genuinely Belgian has probably helped a lot for that.
Good. All right. Well, so they look the strongest team in this group, but
they don't.
Oh, don't they?
I think Russia.
You think Russia?
Yeah.
I'm surprised about this, because when was the last time Russia did anything?
In the World Cup?
Yeah. Or even a Euros.
Well, they were quite 88? Good in Euros in 2008.
They had that moment. Oh, they had that moment with Arshavin,
didn't they?
A while ago,
they had their moments.
Yeah.
The new Platini, as I like to call them.
The one thing is that those Belgians, I mean, you know, a lot has been said about the fact that they play in England and so forth. And one of the results of that is also they will have had a very, very, very tough physically speaking, kind of season. And yeah. I think people are seeing them. Everybody would like them to do well, but this Russian team has been quietly impressive, I must say.
Yeah?
Yep. And I think as well that Capello has made some very brave choices when he chose his 23.
Portugal and Northern Ireland beat them in the qualifiers.
Yeah, but they have improved. I think it's only two defeats in 2 years, two and a half years. Yeah.
Mm. Didn't Capello do really well in qualifying with England as well before?
He did.
Yeah. No, but I think they're stronger than people think, and it's a much younger team than the ones. There are eight players who've got less than five caps in that team. A lot of the old deadwood has been chopped away.
Right.
It's a very homogeneous team.
A very inexperienced team is what you're saying.
Well, there are some players of great experience.
Would you agree, though, that the fact that not a single of their players is playing abroad...
That's true.
...is maybe a reflection of a lack of...
But didn't you say that sometimes it's not just picking the big
names? No, absolutely. But you'd like at least one or two players with...
True, but...
...experience at a slightly higher level than the Russian league.
All right, well, can you make a case for South Korea or Algeria, eh? No, all right, maybe not Algeria, but how about South Korea? Amazing, they've been to eight consecutive World Cups. They've been going to World Cups for a long time, haven't they?
Yeah, but apart from the World Cup on home soil, it's been difficult for them to make a huge impression. But that was a fantastic impression.
Well, they got out of the group in two of the last three, one of which, of course, was the one in 2002.
Yeah, in 2002 they got to the semi-finals.
Well, indeed.
And the very elegant defender from that
Byron Moreno, the Ecuadorian referee. Oh, I see what you mean. Sorry, right.
Thank you.
Yeah, they're very elegant defender.
Hong Myung Bo is their coach,
right?
And he's a quite splendid fellow. Actually, I like him.
Oh yeah, why do you like him, Amy?
I like the way he conducted himself when he was captain of that team.
Right.
And
how does he set his team up? Do you like that?
It's a 4-2-3-1 by all accounts, but I think the one being Park Chu-young, who had a season of mainly non-playing, doesn't instill a huge amount of confidence.
What about Song Hong-min?
Hong-min Son, yeah.
Well, yeah, you can jig these words around however you like, Rafa, but
yeah, he's good, but...
he's the playmaker, Salah.
Yeah, he can play on the wings, he can play in the hole, he's very versatile. Had a decent season for Leverkusen, but not quite sort of the superstar in the making kind of player that I think people maybe thought one or two years ago when he was so clearly the best young South Korean player. A little bit inconsistent, a little bit lightweight. Very difficult to predict if he's going to perform. Individually, I think South Korea have more than Algeria, but there isn't much between them.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
Interesting thing about them as well is that it's a very, very young team.
South Korea.
And I think 12 of the 23 players were in that very young group, which did so well at the Olympic Games in 2012. So a bit of an unknown quantity. As to Algeria, if you look through the team, I mean, they've got a coach, Coach Vahid is going to make them the usual, very disciplined, very well organized, and they're not going to have a good time during training, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But you look at where they're coming from, and an awful lot of these players are actually, in lesser clubs, should I say, in the top five leagues, and from France, quite a few of them. Actually, quite a few of them have got double French and Algerian nationality.
Mm.
And
So what you're saying is those who couldn't quite play for France.
Exactly, they were not quite good enough.
Opted for Algeria.
They were not quite good enough. And yeah, there's some, I mean, maybe you know them better than I do, like Jamel Mesbah from Livorno.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. So it's not exactly players who are playing at the top of... and also they know they're going to lose their coach at the end of the World Cup. He's going to be replaced, Ayozic, by Gourcuff. Not Johan Stad.
No, Christian. Christian
from Lorient, yeah.
Fantastic, yeah.
Good.
See, they've got. There's one player. I'm looking at this. There's one. Actually.
Hang on, everybody.
No, there's one very dangerous player in that Algerian team. Is Sofiane Feghouli.
Ooh. Yeah. Why is that?
Well, he's been absolutely terrific for Valencia, and not necessarily perhaps this season, but this guy's got tremendous talent. Definitely.
Right. Yes. That notwithstanding, Group H reads how. At the end of the group stages, what are you seeing, Rafa?
I see Belgium and Russia.
Belgium, Russia, Philippe?
In that order.
Russia and Belgium.
And Amy?
Belgium, Russia.
Belgium, Russia. Right. Well, very, very soon we're going to be finding out because, of course, it all kicks off on Thursday. Our pod coverage begins after Brazil, Croatia. And I do hope you'll be joining us for that as we bring you each and every match day, all the latest reports and previews and that kind of thing from around Brazil. So super stuff. In the meantime, this is assuming our flight over takes off. In the meantime, many, many thanks to Amy Lawrence and special guest producer Pete and Philippe Auclair and Raphael Honigstein. Have yourself a super countdown to World Cup kickoff. We'll speak to you soon.
Goal!